Okay, the computer is tabulating. Oh, you got category I9C3G6.
I9C3G6. Is that as good as it sounds?
You have a robust sense of self and are well-suited to leadership positions. Characteristics: strength, determination, tenacity.
Yes, I suppose that's accurate. They do call me Tenacious Ray down at the country club, because for the past 10 years, I've been suing them for discrimination.
TBTL!
TBTL, I love your imagination and your imaginary show.
I've got to have that thing on 24/7. I love the patter.
We can save any segment we've done in the past, okay? Remember that segment where we did the world's fattest pets? Glenn lost all the tapes? We made that work.
You mean when we got those two rabbits and we tied them together to look like a big fat one?
Yeah, people loved it. They bought it.
I see you exhaling, sir. We're going to be with you in just a moment. You've got to be patient, okay? We're very, very sorry. Our apologies. We apologize to you. You will not have to wait that much longer at all.
Oh, yes. Your long national wait is over, everybody, because it is time for a Tuesday morning edition of TBTL.
Isn't that for techno geeks with spreadsheets?
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
I just want you to be normal, and clearly you're not.
I paused there because I thought to myself, huh, that audio drop cuts off kind of abruptly.
Isn't that for techno geeks with spreadsheets?
And then I realized, oh, that was 3 weeks of the show talking about that. I selected that audio drop because of the fact that it cuts off unceremoniously. Here we are at the offices of Walsh, Walsh & Doormat, bringing you episode 2795 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
And even though I am down here in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, I am carefully monitoring things back at the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center via a remote camera to try to catch a raccoon that may or may not be breaking into our house and eating Olive's cat food.
It's time for Operation Crazy Plan.
We'll see if I can catch me a varmint on camera coming up. Also, I was down here for Carrie's birthday.
That's my wife.
We're staying in a hotel. And, well, I was getting ready this morning. I was sitting in the lobby. I was doing a little show prep. And somebody did something. I realized there was a problem with the chair that I was sitting in. And I don't know. I think it was not the most polite thing.
How rude!
Somebody could have done, so I'll talk about that too. Get your feedback on what happened and if I'm in the right or if I'm in the wrong. And then we have a special friend of the show coming by. You know her from Kiki's Corner, Christina Lopez. Today it's Kiki's Fire Corner because she has a fire take that's relevant to the holidays and
things are gonna get hot. They're gonna get funky. Somebody better open the window.
She's going to talk to us about her theories on Christmas present opening. So we are going to, we're going to have her on, we're going to do some emails and V-mails, and we're going to talk to this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their splendor. Television is no friend of his. Here he is again, back at it with the white Vans. And, I walked in this morning. It was weird. He was folding a Coke can into a bizarre shape. He looked me dead in the eye and he just said,
"Time is a flat circle."
And I'm still trying to unpack what that was. He is Andrew Walsh and he joins me from right across this table right now. Good morning, my Cobra.
Think about it, man. Just think about it. You're not thinking about it.
I'm not. I'm really not. That show is one of those things that it was so good. And then season two, I think, was not for a lot of people as good. And then it was sort of like made all of the like, I was going with them on all the crazy talk in season one. I was like, man, McConaughey makes a real point.
Yeah.
And then right. Season two, I was like, no, they don't know what they're doing. This is just nonsense.
They're just saying words. Hey, by the way, I'm sorry. I left these.
The curtains.
The curtains were closed when you came in here. Did you think I was inviting you into the Bat Cave?
I thought, you know what? The thought crossed my mind. They're maybe like, that's an audio, that's an acoustic thing. Maybe the curtains are closed because it keeps the sound cozier and there's maybe less echo with them.
Probably does, actually. What's happening is I have these nice thick blackout curtains in here, which is I like blackout curtains as a concept, by the way, in a bedroom. You know, like when I'm in a hotel, you
don't.
You can because you don't wake up on time.
I'm gonna have another.
Things are gonna get hot. They're gonna get funky. Somebody better open the window.
If you don't have to wake up the next day, do you like them?
I like the idea of the outside light. Even if it's not waking me up, I like it slowly bringing me to consciousness. And I mean, I guess here would be the thing. If I were in a hotel room and I had really tied one on the night before, or I for some reason I was like, I'm writing tomorrow off. Mm-hmm. Like I have no plans. I don't have to be anywhere. I am not going to interact with the world. Then the blackout curtains would be kind of nice. Mm-hmm. But last night, because Carrie and I were staying here in Seattle, we were in this hotel downtown, and it actually had these real cool views of the Space Needle and that sort of downtown skyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it had two layers of curtain. It had that sheer curtain that kind of makes it so people can't quite see what's going on in the room, mm-hmm. but you can still see everything.
But you can still stand there naked and look at them. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. The nudity curtain.
Yes, right, of course.
And then it had the, like, I guess probably blackout or much more opaque curtains.
Oh, and those are the ones where you can stand there naked and peek through the crack.
Right, peeking curtain.
Okay, gotcha.
And so
you get the peeking curtain.
We closed the naked curtains, and then I was like, that's enough, right? And Carrie was like, nah, let's close the peeking curtains. And so we did, but we actually started talking about that because if I were alone in that hotel room, and this happens to me a lot, particularly if the hotel room has, or any room that I'm in, let's say, if it has a nice view of stuff, I like to wake up and just open my eyes and look out at that thing. And so I guess I would say I'm sort of anti-blackout curtain. Now, some people, there are people who work graveyard shift and things, and they're like, they swear by them. They're like, you cannot sleep, you know, in the day and work at night if you don't have them. But for me, I'm so big on natural light.
Born in the dark. You merely adopted it, is what you're saying.
I am my mother's son. It's not even funny. Like all of her sort of oddball. She's very big on natural light. She's very big on fresh air. The radio show. Mm-hmm, huge.
No, who isn't?
Gross. Actually, she's a Dave Davies head.
Yeah.
That's the funny part. So she's been getting a lot of Dave Davies
lately.
That's good. She's enjoying that. Okay. Let me just update you on Operation Olive Plan. Because we're down here staying in Seattle, it means that our house is... nobody get any ideas, okay? Don't go try to break in because I have a security system.
Pretty oblique as to where you live. I don't think anybody could figure out where you live.
Thanks, Internet. I appreciate it. Thanks for all the nice things people have mailed us. And thank you for all the people who've mailed me things that aren't bombs so far. I appreciate it. So we're down here and Rudy is at her, at the doggy sleepaway camp. But that means that Olive... is home alone, and we don't want her just to be trapped in the house. So we open the pet door, which used to be no big deal. But of course, one of Olive's things is that she likes to go out and catch rabbits and stuff, and bring them home and bring them into the house. So we have usually left that door down. Now, occasionally, we have started in extreme circumstances, or because we just have no other option, we'll leave that thing open so she can come and go and get her food. And then we have our neighbor Rich, who is definitely a real person. He's going to come over this morning and he's going to check on her. Here, though, is something, and check on her food, make sure that, you know, it's okay. Here is something weird that has happened the last couple of times we've opened that pet door and been out of town. The food is not just all of it is eaten, which Olive never does. She never gets to the bottom of her food bowl. Not only is it all eaten, it's like licked clean. It's like the Olive's food dish has gone through the dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
That is not her normal behavior. And what it means is there is definitely a cat or maybe a raccoon that has figured out that sometimes when that pet door is open, it can come through that door, get up there, eat all of Olive's food, and then leave. Now, I will give this animal credit. It's pretty polite. It has not really trashed things, which makes us think maybe it's a cat. Because a raccoon, those can, you know, they're mischievous.
Or when Genevieve is gone and I have the house to myself, I find myself puttering a lot more. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance that maybe Olive's behavior changes a little bit? She's mm-hmm. done with her food. She has learned how to use the dishwasher. She's doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. She's just kind of puttering.
She's standing over the sink. She's eating. cat litter, one, or I should say cat food.
Cat sausages.
One piece at a time.
Yeah.
She's playing Madden, although mm-hmm. her version is called Cadden.
Yeah, of course it
she
is.
She sets it on easy. Maybe. I mean, we can't rule that out. But here's the thing. We have this camera. This is why people can't break into my house, because the thing is like friggin' Fort Knox. We got security. It's a whole thing. But we also have this camera that's usually on the front porch. And I moved it yesterday. I took it off the front porch and set it up in our kitchen. And I put it. I pointed it at Olive's food dish. Now I'm already. I've opened up the app here, the mm-hmm. Simply Safe app. We do not do ads for Simply Safe, but of course I would accept them if they wanted. And now I'm going to click. I already am kind of having a little bit of disappointment because the camera is automatically starts recording people and things when if there's motion,
mm-hmm.
and I usually get an indication, like I get a little notification.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
My parents caught me getting home late when I was visiting them in Cleveland. I didn't know they had that
stuff.
Oh,
wow.
But it's like, oh, you got home late last night. I'm like, yeah. I said, I hope I didn't wake you when I opened the door or whatever. He's like, well, we get texts for that stuff. And then he showed me, like you could hear me,
because
I had walked home from a bar like 2 miles and I was like out of breath and sniffling and you could hear me in the...
Well, we go now live to Olive's food dish, which...
Oh, it's on the counter. So you encourage her to jump on the counter to eat.
Well, because Rudy would eat it if it were at ground level. And so it's up. And as you can see, Andrew,
it's full.
It is full. There's food spilled around the side of the dish, which is a very Olive move.
Mm.
And it means that we were raccoon or rogue cat free last night at Burbank Springs.
Did you see, though, can you enhance that? It looked like in the back there was a book that says how to use a dishwasher for dummies. So we might be just honing in on it here.
Yeah. There was the plot is definitely thinning.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I was very excited about that. I felt like I was an old time trapper yesterday when I set it up, like I had set a trap line somewhere in the snow, although that's actually kind of cruel and unusual. This was more just, you know, filming whatever came in the house, but it didn't work. My trap did not snare any footage of the cat or whoever else it was.
Well, literally the only thing I know about raccoons, I learned from Where the Red Fern Grows. Remember that? Well, I know two things. They wear little robber masks.
Yeah,
because they're sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
You read Where the Red Fern Grows, right? It's really sad.
Yeah.
About this. That was like the first really sad literature
I am with
I read
you. That
as
was
kid.
As a kid, because it's about his hunt is his raccoon dog.
Exactly.
I mean, I think raccoons think of it as less of a sad story. I think they think of it as thank God, one more of these hell beasts that chase us to the ends of the earth is now out of our life.
Where the Red Fern Grows, a raccoon manifesto. The one thing that I remembered learning
where
from
the Red
that
Fern
book,
groans.
Oh, well, let's call the show that. Is they capture raccoons, right, by putting something.
They tree them, don't they?
Well, they do that, but they also, they'll put something shiny in a place where a raccoon's hand can slip down into it and grab the shiny thing. But then once it grabs the shiny thing, the shiny guy.
Yeah, all the stories.
They make a fist, and if the hole is small enough, the raccoon then can't pull its fist out of the hole. Ooh. But the raccoon will not let go because there's something in their brain that once they've grabbed onto the shiny thing, they won't let go of it, and that's how you trick a raccoon.
Wow. Well,
see, the book's sad for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm
this shiny guy always worries.
I really am turning into a person who. If I hear about any animal in any level of distress, and I the food chain and the pecking order of this planet, it necessarily it creates a world where not all animals can be doing great at the same time.
Right.
You know, like the antelope out on the prairie. Will at some point, if it gets sick and starts lagging behind the pack, it will get taken down by the lions and it won't be great. They're not going to anesthetize mm-hmm. the thing before it happens. Like it's, you know, life is short, nasty, and brutish, as they say. But now it's like even just thinking about I'm sad about if I'm spoiling the red fern for you, where the red fern grows, you need to really reassess your priorities in life. But I'm sad that the dog dies, but I'm also sad that the raccoons...
They both die, I think, don't they?
Or maybe. I'm sad that there are dogs that pass away, mm-hmm. and I'm sad that there are raccoons that are being treed, even though, I don't know. You know, it's like, I feel like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold all of these feelings at the same time. Like, any animal, like an animal, like a raccoon now reaching into a thing to grab a shiny thing and then holding on, and then that allowing them to come get the raccoon, that makes me feel sad.
But don't you think that there's also something like kind of symbolic or teachable about that as it applies to humans? Like, it's almost like the man who goes out in the desert. I'm going to mess this up so bad. But the Bible story where the man goes out in the desert, I believe, and collects a bunch of gold, but then doesn't want to leave the gold behind, and so ends up dying in the desert because he can't carry it all back.
That's in the Bible?
I don't know. You would know better than me.
Maybe I don't think that's in the Bible,
it might have been something I dreamt. No, but that's definitely some sort of a parable.
Your brain was trying to work out some real stuff.
Somebody will write in and tell us what that's from. I thought it was from the Bible, but there is definitely a parable of a man mm-hmm. who will not leave his treasure behind, and therefore the treasure ends up being his downfall, where he could have kept his life and come back to civilization or something along those lines. And I feel like the raccoon not letting go of the glittery thing is kind of like that.
I had a moment yesterday where I was, in my mind, I was like, I am doing one of those fox chicken bag of grain situations, and it was, I had our old ass Toyota 4Runner, which I don't think can drive to Seattle successfully anymore, and so I needed to get a rental car from the airport, but I had all this stuff in the Toyota, and the parking lot where you park your car is far away from the parking lot where the rental cars are,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, and I was also, of course, late. And so I'm hustling because I'm trying to get there, get the car, and then get to Seattle in time for Carrie's birthday dinner. And so I'm like driving there, and my brain is furiously spinning trying to think, how do I get this stuff mm-hmm. most efficiently into the rental car? Oh, and but also not get completely torrentially soaked.
Right. Because it'll ruin the grain.
Well, exactly. And then her birthday grain has been ruined.
Right.
And so
the fox is sad.
So then I did this. I know we've got to go to a break and we got to get our special guest on. But then I so here's what I ended up doing, because the airport of Bellingham is not like a real airport. Like, it's not, it ain't like SeaTac. I realized, oh, I can just drive my real car into the area where the rental cars go, where the rental fern grows, mm-hmm. I think is my follow up uh-huh. novel. And so to my debut novel, which was The Avis Wizard. A Luke Burbank story. Anyway, so I drive basically through this like exit only thing, and I drive my car right up into where all the Avis rental cars are, because there's nobody out there. I mm-hmm. parked the car.
But you drove in through the exit. That is so scary around airports, because they all have those.
Yeah, but not at Bellingham. That's the thing.
Those tread things that
I know.
Can pop your tires.
I know. Those are
our worst nightmare.
Dude, I have anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, you saying right. that makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yes, the things that you and I are most scared yeah. of together are those spikes for exit only yeah. at rental car places, and accidentally using the mini bar in a hotel because it will be charged $1 million.
Dude, they had one in our room last night, and I looked at Karen, and I was like, don't even
breathe on it.
Think about
now
it.
Now that they have those weighted things in there, you're like Indiana Jones
oh
with a
my
bag
God.
Of sand.
Stresses me out so much. Anyway, so this did not have any of those spikes, thank goodness. And I went in and I was able to do my little trading of everything and getting it into the car. Anyway, okay, those are two really, I think, important stories for our time. One, my raccoon video trap that didn't work out, and me successfully transferring luggage from one car to another. So,
well, can we keep an eye on the raccoon thing?
Absolutely.
You'll get alerts if anything
I
goes
will.
Down.
Yeah, let's see here. I've got this. I've got it going here from Simply Safe, and we'll just, in fact, you know what? I'm just going to do that. I'm going to leave it running.
I like that. That's
you will
good.
Be able to see it from your position. I'll Sweet. Be able to see it from over here.
I'm just going to go behind my peeping curtains because I like to watch from there.
I have a feeling. Please.
I'm
not
so
the,
sorry,
not
everybody.
Not the naked curtains today.
I'm so sorry, everybody.
The other thing is, we very well may see Rich, my neighbor who is totally real, come in because he's there to check on Olive's food at some point.
Uh-huh.
So this is...
So if he doesn't show up and I don't see him, you will admit that he does not exist. Especially if you see him and I don't.
When did this show turn into that movie Sliver with Billy Baldwin and Sharon Stone?
Oh,
we're just
God.
Like watching, trying to watch people on hidden video cameras.
Why is Olive taking a bath?
All okay, right. We got to take a break, and then when we come back, Kiki Lolo will check in, and we'll do emails and V-mails and a bunch of other stuff. Don't go anywhere. It's TBTL.
tonight's not all you are. I'm sorry about making a pass. It was subtle, but I think that you grasped the meaning intended. I can be a friend to you.
All right, welcome back. Do you know these guys, Camera Obscura?
I know the name. I think I have a few like MP3s floating around somewhere, but I don't know their like general vibe.
Their general vibe is they clearly listened to a lot of Belle and Sebastian when they were kids, and I love them. And this song is great because they say, "I should be suspended from class." It's the name of the song. And they say, "I don't know my elbow from my arse."
Oh, yeah.
They're from like...
Oh, they're from
Australia.
Australia.
It's either Australia, New Zealand, London, or maybe Germany. But we've narrowed it down to most of the Western world.
Do they still call Germany the Australia of the North?
I think Shatner Claus does.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, more on that coming up in the email segment, by the way. I messed up, per use, I messed up some major details of William Shatner's voiceover.
But not your session. Fault.
Not my fault. Once again, this one was squarely on the shoulders of one T.J. Hooker, a.k.a. Bill Shatner. So more on that coming up. First, though, this is exciting. One of our favorite people in the world is joining us now from Los Angeles, California. Kiki, do you love me? It is Christina Lopez. Hi.
Hi. That kills me every single time.
It's now like I hear that song, and I'm waiting for that, and I think of you, Christina.
It was quite serendipitous that it came out the same time, around the same time that we decided this was going to be my nickname for the show.
Oh, and by the way, your nickname, not just for the show, you sent me a photo. Your coworkers got you a special Kiki-related gift there at Marketplace, right?
Yeah. It was. It's funny because like one of my good office friends here is he just is moving into the space while they're renovating, and so he's the one I kind of like to giggle with and chat with. And Kiki actually means like just someone you have fun with, and so they're calling our corner of the office is called Kiki Corner.
Oh, that's perfect. Ooh, and do they know
about?
Yeah,
that's kind of a bit of a trademark thing that we have filed. So if you could let Kai Rizdahl know, or whoever it is that you're joking around with down there in LA.
Yeah.
So do they know?
Kai Rizdahl just having like a little Kiki.
So when they sent you that Kiki book, they got you a book or something that says what is the name of the book again? Kiki's Big Day.
It was Kiki's First Christmas, and it was like a little cat celebrating its like first Christmas, and spoiler alert, it knocks down over the Christmas tree of its new family's home, and hijinks ensue.
So that was not necessarily a reference to your role on TBTL or Kiki's Corner in the newsletter.
No, I think there's maybe three people in the office who know about that.
Okay.
That constitutes about 40% of our total listenership, by the way. So if you could try to get that number up to 7 or 8, we'd really be able to charge more for these Everlane ads. Well, happy holidays to you, Christina. We want to talk about a few things with you, including some Christmas music. But I know that you're heading to New York later this week, I assume, to hang with family.
Tomorrow. Yeah. I head over tomorrow, actually. My flight leaves at like 5:30 in the morning.
Is that a big thing in your parents' household, like the Christmas and all that? It's a big family deal?
Yeah, especially just because I come back into town. And I really, you know, my dad's like really excited to see me. He's been counting down every time I talked to him on the phone. He was like, 12 days, 10
that's
days.
That's really cute. It's like he has what are those? It's like an advent calendar of when his daughter comes home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you, did your family do a whole big present thing? I'm getting towards your tweet here, which, by the way, congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of likes, a lot of retweets. It's clearly struck a nerve. You wrote, and I'm sort of paraphrasing here, you wrote, people should not have to open the present you got them in front of you.
We're just like, don't coerce the person into opening a gift in front of you that you got for them, because it mostly comes from like your own benefit.
Right.
And like, that's not the purpose of giving a gift.
A lot of people clearly agree with you.
Yeah. And it's also just like, as someone with like a little social anxiety, it's kind of like, I am also a terrible liar. So if I don't like the gift, I'm going to feel bad that I'm not convincingly lying about how much I don't know. I feel...
I'll be honest with you. It had never occurred to me. that was even a possibility. Like, we could just all give each other gifts and then we could all just open them at a different time. Mm-hmm. And then then have a little bit of buffer to get back to each other. Like, think up a good response. The only problem is, like, if I was getting a gift from my wife, I would be happy to open it in front of her because she's a thoughtful gift giver. If I was opening a gift from my mom, I need 6 to 8 months to come up with an appropriate response. Like, I need certain I need to not open presents from certain people in front of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine because there are a lot of times where, like, maybe someone gives you a gift in the office and you don't open it right away. It's just the people who, like, demand that you open it in front of them that really just get me. There's, like, a level of coercion there that's, like, uncomfortable.
Right, but for around the Christmas time in particular, I mean, the whole thing is built around we're sitting down on the floor near the Christmas tree. We're opening the presents. It's, like, a whole holiday designed around creating this moment where you have to be, like, oh, cool, you know, which is
– yeah.
I don't have a lot of social anxiety, but I'm right there with you. It is a lot of pressure to like a present from someone when it's not something you really want or were, like, hoping for.
Yeah, like an off-brand iPad or something like that.
Right. I will say, like, I hate opening gifts, even if I love the gift. And even if the person, like, honestly, one of the only people that I trade gifts with now is Genevieve. And even then, I have a level.
You're going to like your gift this year, by the way.
I guarantee.
No, really.
You've been a consultant on the gift buying.
Yeah.
See, it's even more pressure. No, I just feel so much pressure. I feel so watched and, like, what is going on with my face? Even if it's like something that I actually love.
All we want to do is be seen, but none of us want to be watched.
And it's just honestly, opening gifts has got to be one of my least favorite things in the world. And I have a lot of social anxiety. And you know, I will tell you, growing up, me and my sister, we were treated very well as kids on Christmas, right? We'd come down on Christmas morning, tons of stuff under the tree. We were very blessed and spoiled, as I often say, and we would just come down and we would tear into our gifts, and that was our tradition. And then my dad got married to my stepmom, I'm going to say, when I was probably in late high school. So obviously the little kid aspect was gone at that point anyway, but a new tradition was born, which was we all got together, including my stepmom's family and our family, and we would all take turns opening one gift, and you just go around. You, like, literally, I remember, like, kind of sitting in a circle around a living room in somebody's house, and there were a bunch of gifts to open, but we all took a turn, and nobody opened a gift until the other person opened a card, opened a gift, gave appropriate response. Now your turn. That was very stressful for me.
What's the ritual at your house, Christina?
Well, I mean, we do, I will say, like, the Christmas day for the little kids, like, we do open the gifts in front of each other. And we actually, as adults now, do Secret Santa. So we all don't get gifts for each other anymore.
Nice.
My brother, my mom and my dad and my sister-in-law all draw. Like, they do a digital draw. And so, spoiler alert, this year I got my dad.
Oh, nice.
Did you say digital draw?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So it's a website that you enter everybody's names and they pick them out at random for you.
Wow. We'd like to welcome new sponsor, Digital Draw, to the show. That's a pretty good idea. Yeah, my family has, because we didn't really do kind of a traditional Christmas for a lot of my childhood because my parents were, like, real into this version of Christianity where they were like, no Christmas. And so then when we finally started to have it, it was like, well, what happened was we didn't have a Christmas tree, but my mom got, like, stockings. My dad was like, okay, we can have stockings. And then my mom started jamming presents into the stockings. The stockings would be full of presents, which was kind of fun, except they were weird presents. And they remain very weird. I talked about this last week on the show. My mom gave me once it was a small framed drawing of two angels lying on a hill at a golf course watching a guy putt a golf ball. Mm-hmm. They were like naked cherubs watching a guy putt a golf ball. No, there's nothing I've just said that is related to anything I've ever expressed interest in. Cherubs, golf, small framed drawings. Like, it was so random. but we are very much a family that is about, Carrie has noted this, you know, her family.
That's my wife.
Her family is a little different. Like, my family is all about really big outward expressions of, like, oh my God, thank you. Like, I think it stresses Carrie out because her family is appreciative, but to what I would consider to be an appropriate level.
Mm-hmm.
Her family's move, not to get deep on this, but see, Christina, you write a fire tweet and it just takes me here. My wife's family is emotionally and in every other way supportive of each other. So they don't have to prove anything on Christmas, which how much they liked a sweater. Like, they're just doing the real work most of the time. So they can be like, hey, thank you, a candle. Whereas in my family, it's like, oh, my God, I've never seen such a candle.
Right, right. Oh, wow. That's so – you're stressing me out.
Hey, you're invited this year, Andrew.
Oh, the only thing that would make that all better is if we can all do it in our pajamas. How about that?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So I
also do. There is a tradition that I have also, like, so we don't really do Christmas dinner. Like, Christmas Eve is actually the bigger of the holiday days for us than Christmas Day, oddly enough. But on Christmas Day, we do like a Christmas brunch, and I'm the person responsible for cooking the Christmas brunch.
Oh my gosh. Can I just like live vicariously through the Christmas brunch you're having? What are you making?
Okay, so I might switch it up this year. I don't know. I really honestly just make the Christmas brunch to, like, please my sister-in-law. That's the only person I care about.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
I just want her to, like, be happy and enjoy, because she just genuinely does. Yeah.
Wait, why is she the most important?
I grew up with my family. It's like, it's easy to like know what's going to be a home run with them.
Right.
I just want my sister-in-law's,
I love that you're still mildly showing off your sister-in-law.
I know, but the thing is, like, they've been together for like 8 years, but I mean, I was not there for any of their courtship. So like, I only really see her in these like little holiday bursts and like when I visit. So I'm like, I still have to win her over because I don't have that quality time.
So there's a lot of pressure on these holidays. So what are you going to make? Well, how are you going to impress her?
So usually I have a nice quiche that I make that's really easy, and it's a crustless quiche. So I love doing that. And there's a really great baked French toast recipe that Chrissy Teigen came up with that involves like a little bit of rum and some cornflakes on the top, and it has to like soak for 8 hours beforehand.
And then you bake it.
So it's like, yeah.
Nice.
Does your family have any recipes that don't call for rum?
No.
The happiest family in Brooklyn.
Yes, that's why we are so happy, Andrew. Come on.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, and then I make some breakfast potatoes that with like a little bit of seasoning from Old Bay. I think people don't utilize Old Bay enough. I think it's a great seasoning.
And then you say that Christmas. Wait, are you saying Christmas Eve is a big deal too? Do you guys do a whole elaborate meal for that as well?
Yeah, that's when like the big dinner happens. I think it's also because my brother splits his time between the two families. So like Christmas Eve is like our time with the kids, and then Christmas brunch happens, and then they go all day in Washington Heights to go hang out with my sister-in-law's family.
So your brunch is also trying to kind of, you're representing your family, sort of. You're trying to show that you can hang, or maybe even are better than her family.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe there's a little bit of competition there.
I feel like, I don't know how to start this movement, but I'm with you. I think you maybe are the person to try to lead this movement of somehow making it socially acceptable to not open presents in front of each other. Again, yeah, little kids, that's pretty easy because they usually go, you know, they're pretty stoked about whatever. But as adults, like, let me put it this way. I am 100% fine with people who I get gifts for not opening them in front of me. In fact, I think it takes the pressure off me too as a gift giver. Like, is there a way, like, we've created so many more, boundaries now in a good way. We could talk about being socially anxious. We can talk about people have, I don't know why I'm considering a service animal a social boundary, but I mean, we're a little better with self-care now, I think, and talking about it. And can we come up with a way to just describe to people, oh, I don't like opening presents in front of other people. So could we just do the, like, you know, I'll just let you know how it went or something. I mean, I wonder if there's some kind of succinct way to start to create, I don't know, a phrase for this so that we can just start doing, because it would honestly make my life. And again, I'm not a particularly socially anxious person, but it would make my life a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if there's a way we can just be like, I don't know. Sometimes I'm rude about it. Like, I'm just like, no, I'm not going to do that for you.
And you're feeling like if we had a word like giftafarian or something, like, I'm sorry, I'm a giftafarian. I only open gifts back at home. Like, if we just normalized it so that there was some sort of name for it, it wouldn't.
Yeah, maybe we need some really great branding around this.
Right. And that's, by the way, giftafarian is not good branding. I'm really ashamed that that's the best I came up with there.
I don't know how many Rastafarian listeners we have who will be.
Or had.
Yeah, right. I think they're pretty like chill about things. I wish that I could come up with a way to like get this activated before this Christmas, because it could get me out, as we say on the show, out of a couple of jams. I love my mom so much, but my mom is really, really, she gives gifts that I can only describe as bizarre, and she has a very, very, very big expectation around what your response is. It's a real double whammy.
I really wish I had gotten you something to open today. I wish I had known we were having this conversation. I would love to hand you a package right now.
Well, and listen.
Has there ever been a gift that you given your mom that you knew didn't go over well, or has she always kind of played along?
Okay, let me say this. I've been a little harsh on old Susie B.
I'll say, what's up, doke?
To her credit, she is deeply appreciative of anything you give her. So it's not like she's not somebody who's like got real high standards for what people are giving her, but then she will kind of just give any old thing to someone. I mean, the problem for my mom is that, and I know that she's not going to hear this because she recently asked me she was trying to look me up on the internet and couldn't find me, which I thought was shocking, because if you type my name into the internet, really any of our names into the internet, you'll find us. That's kind of how it works. But she,
that's why you need a blue check mark. Told you.
Am I enough now, Mama? I'm verified. Are you verified, Kiki?
I'm not. I haven't tried though. So.
Okay, good. Well,
maybe I should.
You, me, and Andrew are all not verified.
No,
let's keep.
And
it.
I have tried.
That's the new cool thing, is to be not verified. My mom. The thing with my mom is that she will pick something up and then she will then decide who it could be for. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like she doesn't. She doesn't think, oh, Luke, here's what he would like, and then buy him that thing, him in this case being me. She sees a drawing of two cherubs watching a guy put a golf ball. She acquires it, and then she says, who could this be for? Mm-hmm. And then by process of elimination, I guess it's me. I usually go with some kind of Barnes & Noble related thing. My mom loves books. For a while she had a scam going where she would buy books at like rummage sales and then take them to Barnes & Noble and sell them, return them to Barnes & Noble like she had bought them there. And they would say, we can't give you money for this because you don't have the receipt. And then they would just give her store credit to make her go away. So for a while she had hundreds, if not thousands of dollars of Barnes. She personally is driving Barnes & Noble out of business. Even the irony is she loves that place.
I love this story.
She would go to like a garage sale or rummage sale, and she would get, if the book was new enough, she would then take it back to Barnes & Noble, and then they would give her store credit for it.
That is amazing. Can't you scan that? Don't they have internal systems?
I honestly think they were like,
the number or whatever.
The ISBN number, I believe. Right?
Yeah.
I think they probably were just like, we just don't have the energy to argue about this.
We're spending more money arguing.
Yeah. Here's six Barnes & Noble bucks. Put them on your card, lady, whatever. She loves Barnes & Noble. She hangs out there all the time. She hangs out in the coffee shop. So I love my mom. My brother, David, who is such a sweet guy, and I think less of a smack talker about our beloved mother, is going to hear this and he'll be mad at me. So I just need to say our mom is a delight and like livens up every room she's in, and people who've heard her on the show know her and love her. So my mom is the greatest. This is just one of those things where, truth be told, I would rather open her presents and then have a little buffer time to let her compose a proper response, because she also wins in this scenario, because then I can give her a good response that will make her feel good too, instead of just like, yeah, that's a sweater. I've always noted that if what the person says is just describing what the thing is.
Right.
Oh.
A leather-scented candle.
Oh, a candle.
I once got a mohair lime green sweater. Mm. Like, how am I supposed to react to that?
That is bold. Like, the gift giver was, I mean, because that is not something that, like, now let's just say it's possible that maybe if you loved it, that could be a total home run, but you are really rolling the dice as the gift giver. Lime, mohair. I mean, that's a polarizing gift.
Yeah. And I had to open it in front of them and it was awful.
What did you say?
This is what triggered. I was just like, thank you. But I know I'm a terrible liar. So I know that my mouth is saying thank you, but my eyes were saying this is terrible.
Yeah.
Did you ever wear the sweater?
No, it was itchy.
All right. Well, listen, Christina, I know you've got places to be and meetings to have down there in Los Angeles. But before we let you go, do you have a we're trying to end the show with some holiday music this week. Do you have a any kind of a holiday Christmas type music that you'd like to recommend for when we get to the end of the show?
Yeah, there's a cover of Wonderful Christmas Time by a band named Tuxedo, who is actually made up with, like, Mayor Hawthorne is one of the band members.
Oh.
But I just really like it. I think it's composed really well. I know people hate Wonderful Christmas Time.
Well,
I don't know why.
I don't either. I played it on this show at the beginning of the Christmas times, I think Andrew was less a fan of some of the production elements of the song. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but I thought the instrumentation is what's problematic. Because I don't know if I heard this Tuxedo version, but over the weekend I heard a version of this song that was a little bit more acoustic-y. It didn't have the brown, 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 or whatever the sound is that Paul McCartney's instruments
yeah,
are making.
Like, it was like Paul McCartney had just discovered a synth.
Right,
right.
Like, that was the first song that he was trying it out, and he went a little overboard.
But obviously,
look at me criticizing Paul McCartney, like, a song composer.
Yeah, but obviously, dude can write a nice poppy song. And so, again, I don't know if this is the version we're going to play later that you're suggesting, but I think the song has good bones, as they would say.
Yeah.
We just need to strip it down,
Knock
down some of these walls, make
exactly.
It open concept. Okay. All right, Christina. Well, we'll play that later on. And thank you so much for coming on the show. And have a happy holiday and have fun back there drinking rum in Brooklyn or eating rum in Brooklyn.
Drinking and eating rum in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye, Kiki. Bye. I just pulled a total Kevin and Bean.
I know.
Do you know that that's a, yes. Do you know
oh,
that
you
that's
did it on
a big
purpose?
Thing? No. I did it unintentionally. I thought you said unintentionally. That is a big thing on their show. Kevin will always hang up in the middle of the guest's last goodbye. And this time I thought we were in the clear, but you could hear me hanging up on Kiki.
Well, thank you, Christina, for jumping on with us. And by the way, if you have not subscribed to the TBTL newsletter, I would recommend you do so because first of all, Andrew, you're writing. I say this about once every 2-3 months to you. Mm. The newsletter is genuinely hilarious.
Dude. Oh yeah, I got your text this Saturday.
Like,
that made my day.
I look forward to the newsletter all week. Typically, newsletters for radio shows and products and things like that are kind of meh. But no, Andrew, it is really funny. And then also we do have the occasional Kiki's Corner,
yes,
where Christina Lopez chimes in with various things, and that's also real fun, Andrew. You are about to see something on my phone. Are
what
you hearing?
This?
I just heard the door open. I believe you are about to witness in the flesh my neighbor, Rich, who is very real. He is walking in. Yeah. Andrew is putting the microphone up to my phone. Look it. Look it.
I don't see his face. It's like a real home improvement situation here. His face is obscured.
Is all of crap somewhere? All right. Well, listen, my point in this is just that my neighbor Rich is very much a real person now. I hope you're happy. I don't want to play anymore because
All I saw was the back of a yellow jacket. That could have been anybody pretending to be
him. There goes the cat.
Your cat is definitely real.
The cat is real. The cat is eating the food.
The top of somebody's head. I saw a little bit of hair.
Imagine how elaborate this scam would have to be if I hired someone to go over and pretend to be my neighbor.
Can I ask you a question that occurred to me the other day, and
yes,
I meant to look it up, and this is either going to be super, super, super embarrassing, or you're going to think I'm playing dumb as a spoof, and I promise you I'm not. I'm actually a little bit – I'm not even joking. I'm a little nervous asking this because that's super stupid.
Question away.
On Home Improvement.
Yes.
The whole bit with the neighbor never showing his face.
Yes.
That's not Tim Allen. Is the joke that Tim Allen is playing both characters?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
But I'm not,
because I haven't seen it in so long. I was like, maybe that was the joke, and I didn't get it as a kid that it was Tim Allen on both sides of the fence, and I never went back to look.
I it's funny. I can't remember ever watching an entire episode of that show.
Good for you. Don't brag.
Humble brag. But it is one of those things where it was so ubiquitous in the pop culture that I knew that he had a neighbor. I want to say Wilson.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
by the way, stop ripping off Dennis the Menace. Dennis the Menace's neighbor was Mr. Wilson.
Oh, I wonder if
I guess Mr. Wilson's a very common last name. But, like, it's like you have the neighbor who stands behind, he wears one of those kind of Gilligan like bucket mm-hmm. hats and he stands behind mm-hmm. a fence. I know that much happens on the show, but as far as, and I know that that
you
person
never
is,
see his face. It's
and I know that that's not Tim Allen.
Okay. Okay.
Probably out of, you know, more because Tim Allen, I mean, think about how annoying that'd be for Tim Allen to have to play both characters for like 12 years of that show.
Right. But I mean, I was so blown away when I
There's
found
not
out
enough cocaine in the world to make that. Okay.
Remember when we found out that Positive K does both versions, yeah. the man and the woman in the yeah. song I Got a Man? Like, yes. That blew my mind.
I'm
like,
still not right from that information.
Exactly. Now I'm questioning everything.
I'm still mesmerized watching the cat eat on
so
the
sweet.
Camera, which is not interesting to the listeners. I saw somebody write a joke about their podcast that was just going to be them. They were joking about the worst idea for a podcast, and they said, now I'm just going to describe GIFs for like 4 hours, and I thought, oh, yeah, we've done that.
Yeah, we're getting
we've
close.
We've 100% done that at some point. Could you cue up the thank you music, Maestro?
Yeah, you want to go with the Shirelles?
I do. Right. I very much do. And I want to go with thanking these wonderful donors of the day, people who have donated TBTL during the TBTL-a-thon, and they make the show possible. And they're folks like Joseph Rangstorf of Paulsbow, Washington. You know that, not to put him on blast, but our friend Stu from Internet and his family are going to be, for these holidays, in the greater Paulsbow area.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think we have plans to get together maybe the day after Christmas or something like that. I have a bunch of gifts I'm going to make the family open in front of me.
So, Joseph, if you see Stu from Internet at one of the local brew pubs or microbreweries there in the Paulsbow area, give him the high sign. If you see Piper practicing her dance moves, tell her she's back on my enemies list. The truce expired as soon as mm-hmm. her birthday ended. Molly Lutke of Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Holy Toledo. Chris Herbert of Webster, New York. Ashley Simmons of Folsom, California. I'm suppressing the impulse. Make a Folsom Prison Blues mm-hmm. reference. I wonder if that's been a really good thing or a really bad thing for that town. Obviously, the prison was there.
Prison still exists or no?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, I got out in 84.
Yeah.
And really have not looked back.
I thought you were suing the prison.
I am now because I shouldn't have put an 8-year-old in there.
Yeah, it's fair.
Definitely unconstitutional.
You're putting the system on trial.
Clea Stiebel of Denver, Colorado. And Mary Simpson of Seattle, Washington. Mary, Clea, Ashley, Chris, Molly, and Joseph. Thank you for supporting TBTL. Thank you for donating your hard-earned money. Thanks for making our holiday special by making this our job. We really do appreciate it. Even though sometimes the show is just us watching my neighbor Rich and my cat hang out in my kitchen. Thanks for supporting TBTL.
And Folsom State Prison does still exist. I just wanted to close the loop on
that. Great. We do incarcerate more people than any other country in America. So. Oh, thanks to you. Thank you, baby. Thank you, baby. Oh, thank you, baby. Thank you, baby.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right, the emails are kind of your department, Mr. Walsh, but I was going to jump in here real quick with one that I got because it was relevant to my screw up. It was from listener David. And David said, "Hey, Luke, I love that you asked Bill Shatner about the sabotage pronunciation. I wish it would have made it into the Wait Wait podcast." He said, "One minor sharpshoot, though. It doesn't really change the story, but the audio Shatner was doing was actually for a PC game, not a book. The game was called Star Trek Judgment Rights. It's from 1993, and it's notable as the last Star Trek production to include the entire original cast and DeForest Kelly's last time portraying Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy." A little Star Trek trivia. Matter, antimatter, power out. David in Tokyo. Yes, David, thank you for that clarification. I actually listened to yesterday's show, Andrew, which is rare for me.
Oh, did you listen to the whole thing?
Maybe 70% until I was in this rental car. And then I am like a cat that has to like paw at and mess with things. There was some fancy thing on the steering wheel of the rental car. And I was like, I wonder what this does. And I knew, I was like, I bet you this F's with the radio. But I couldn't not poke, I couldn't not press the button. And what did it do? It took me back to the beginning of the TBTL episode. Oh, and then I was like, I don't got the energy to.
Oh, God.
I ain't fast forwarding through 70 minutes of this. So anyway, I got almost to the end of the show.
I can't remember exactly what it was. If I had a second, I could come up with it. But I actually, and this is kind of rare for me, I cut out.
But didn't you cut out some F-bombs?
I cut out a couple of MF-bombs because I sort of feel like. I mean, I said one of them. I was the first one to say it, and I was just kind of like,
broke the seal.
I did, and I was making fun of NFL announcers, a certain kind of NFL announcer, and I kind of exclaimed. I was pretending I was in the moment, yelling at him, and I said "MF-er," and I was like, "That doesn't need to be in there. It doesn't make the podcast better." And if that's where we draw the line, that's okay. That's not too prudish on our public radio podcast.
I don't think so.
Just to have the hosts not say. And then you made a very quick one later because, again, I broke the seal. So
yeah,
like, maybe
take
these out. But what I didn't tell you, I don't know if you heard it, and I'm trying to remember what it was, but I said something pretty embarrassing in the No Point as well that I was just frankly embarrassed about. And I said to you in the show, "Oh, I'm embarrassed. I made that mistake." And then I went back and I cut all of that out because it didn't affect the show.
Oh, I bet I know what the play was.
What was it?
I bet you were referencing the fact that you didn't realize that Justin Coleman was the defender on
yes,
play.
Yes, 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 exactly. That was it. And it's fine. Like, I don't even mind saying
I love that
now.
We're talking about it.
The funny thing is, I don't even mind saying it now, but somehow, like, it just felt bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I get it.
And I was like, I'll just feel better if this isn't in there.
Yeah,
you know?
I knew
that you knew it, but it's also rare that you go back and listen, so.
Well, so I didn't get to that. I didn't get that far into the show, but I did get to the.
Oh, then I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I did get to the
William Shatner part, and I started to cringe, talk about bad feelings, because I was describing, and I was talking about this audiobook he was recording, and as I heard the voiceover that William Shatner was doing, he's saying things that are obviously just like standalone commands that would be for like a video game or something.
Right.
So that if you click on a certain thing or move the joystick, and I don't think people really use joysticks anymore. He was the voice of Frogger, if I am not mistaken. It was obviously, and I knew originally, the funny part is when I said to William Shatner on Thursday night, when I was setting this whole thing up, I believe I said to him something like, "You were doing the voiceover for a video game," because I had heard that at the time. And then he was the one who said, "It was for my audiobook."
He corrected you. See, I did not realize that.
And so then I was like, well, I guess he must know. And I just think that's kind of interesting. One, because I want to correct the record, because I, like you said, I feel embarrassed that I was saying something that was untrue, or inaccurate. But I also think it's interesting because that's just another layer of how much William Shatner misremembers that event.
Yeah.
He thinks that he was saying sabotage, studio engineer was saying sabotage. And then he also thinks he was recording an audiobook.
And the weird thing is the clip that you played on the show yesterday, you got it from YouTube, and it also includes a clip of him saying sabotage on the TV show as well. So clearly, he thinks the word is sabotage, or had for a big chunk of his life. So for him to now, later in life, tell you, "Oh yeah, no, I say sabotage, but the engineer was wrong," it just doesn't make sense.
And then further complicating things, you and I spent a little time today before we started recording on the show trying to find the full audio. Because that was the other thing. You were absolutely right yesterday, Andrew. Justin Coleman is a receiver. No, you're absolutely
I'm putting it back in. The tape's on the floor.
Oh my God. We've talked about this before, but like, remember the days, the old days of reel to reel editing? Did you ever edit on reel to reel?
I did, but not in any high pressure situations. I learned on reel to reel. I did some very minimal stuff. Yeah.
I don't think I ever cut things on reel to reel under a time deadline, but I do remember being sent into a studio with reel to reel tapes and then losing a word.
Uh-huh.
Like a the or a breath,
mm-hmm.
and then searching around in the like garbage can and around and under the garbage can looking for a little piece of reel-to-reel tape mm-hmm. that I could try to tape back in to. And then I learned how to make fake pauses out of leader tape and stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I just,
good.
And because we used to mix those, like the very early, like the first feature pieces I ever did when I would be like calling Marketplace and pretending like I was a reporter. Those would be mixed in real time by me or by somebody mm-hmm. else. So you'd have like two reel-to-reel machines going, possibly a DigiCart, maybe even a DAT that was saved on a P&O number.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to like – you would play the ambi. It was all in real time and was mm-hmm. really kind of – the choreography of that was pretty involved.
Yeah, so meaning in case you haven't like – if you can't picture it, so Luke's describing all those different pieces of machinery, but they're all being recorded into one thing.
Yes.
So you're kind of firing this tape over here, and then were you talking too? Were you doing the voiceover as well? So you might be.
I must have been.
So and you're like talking into a microphone. You're saying, and then when I talk to so and so about the architecture, what's your famous architecture quote?
Oh, Frank Lloyd Wright was Frank Lloyd Wrong.
That's right. And by the way, somebody sent us that story, and it's the tapes. Totally sounds fine.
I just remember having to go to battle with Marcia, right. The NPR engineer over that.
But you're like talking into a mic and then you say, so and so said this about this building. And then you hit a piece of tape over here while you're recording. Then you hit another one over here.
But you're also
you
bringing
music.
Up like the sound of the birds that were in the background, the ambi. And I think if I remember right, it was a thing where you'd have to get someone to come in because you're trying to read the script and like you'd have to, it would be like a two person operation to try mm-hmm. to get this whole thing recorded in sort of in real time. Anyway, where was I going with that? Nowhere important.
Our jobs are hard.
They are very hard.
That's it.
So anyway, thank you, David, for the correction on the Bill Shatner thing.
I have one more I told you I was going to share with you yesterday. This is from Bruce, our friend Bruce in Athens, Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Formerly Lake Stevens.
Yeah.
Lake Stevens, yeah. Sorry, the word got caught in my throat. And Lake Stevens, that's plays defense. Lake Stevens. Bruce says, hey, friendos, listening to Luke's tales of Soak'em, we're talking about how you called dodgeball Soak'em here in the Pacific Northwest, which makes no sense to me. And also, I said we played with the classic soft rubber balls. That's how we played dodgeball. You said your teacher made you play with the harder, like kind of almost leather or pleather-bound balls that you
like
would play.
Yeah, like a tether ball kind of deal.
Exactly. And Bruce has got your back. He says, listening to Luke's Tales of Soak'em, I have to confirm that at least in Tacoma's Hunt Junior High School, Soak'em used the more painful tetherball style balls. This was the late 1970s, early 80s, and Soak'em was usually an excuse for the PE teacher to check out for the day and just let the class bullies abuse all of those less athletically inclined. It was horrible. Now, you have to take my memories and school experience with a grain of salt. Why? Well, shop class was just a place for kids to make the most painful paddles possible for various teachers. A
lot of peas, dude.
A lot of peas. Yes, being paddled was a definite part of Hunt's public school experience. Also, Hunt graduated Ted Bundy the first year it was open, so there's that.
Yeah, unrelated to the paddling? Probably not.
We got paddled in grade school as well in
Ohio.
Were
in a public school?
In a public school, and in fact, the sixth grade teacher, I've told you my many tales of woe with this guy. I really hated him. He's on our enemies list, Mr. Simmons, who tortured me in various ways. He was one of those teachers who was kind of known as a hard ass, and so like all the bad kids kind of liked him but feared him at the same time, and he would have he would paddle people. He was like the famous paddler, and he had a paddle for each year, and then after you got paddled you would sign it, I think, and he had paddles around his room that everybody signed. Yeah, the look that Luke is giving me right now is just like of disgust and confusion, and that is the look that you should be giving me. He was terrible.
That's like to fetishize this whole thing is just so messed up.
Yeah,
like, I went to a public school that had all, and this is Seattle too, so you know you can imagine in liberal Seattle. I feel like I must have been at the very end of the age group of people who went to a public school where corporal punishment was still being used,
mm-hmm.
and it was not. I think they phased it out like maybe in third grade. I remember our principal, Mr. Moneymaker, Mr. David Moneymaker.
Oh my God.
There was a paddle, and you could.
Who runs the school? Mr. Moneymaker.
Yeah, exactly. There was a paddle. Like, you could get conceivably. I never did. You could get paddled by the principal of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to say that by like fifth grade, they didn't have it anymore. We got a new principal, Aura Franklin, and I think she was not about that kind of stuff.
Did crime go up?
You know, it did, actually, which brings me back to the broken windows theory of crime fighting. But then I transferred to a Christian school, and then there was just all paddling all the time.
Oh, wow.
You know, they were very into it and that. But yeah, that, like, look, I can understand how public school, because corporal punishment was completely accepted in the home, I can understand how a public school into, like, the 70s and even 80s would not instinctively understand that spanking a kid is the wrong thing to do. I think now we understand that it's not a great idea and certainly should not be applied. I don't think it should be applied by anyone, including parents. Although I can't say that if I had a little kid and they were being annoying, I would be, there's no way I wouldn't swat them on the diaper, not hard.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, this idea, this thing you're describing of the teacher making the paddles this whole, like, weird trophy.
Almost like a fraternal kind of thing, I felt like.
That guy is lucky that the internet did not exist, because you would not want to look at his browser history. That is a weird dude, if you ask me.
I mean, I don't think it was weird in that way. I think it was more of a kind of, like, tough guy. Again, right. Aren't there, like, often...
Yeah, the Board of Education.
Right.
That's what they always call it.
Yeah, I think it was more old school.
There's a whole
way.
Thing about cutting holes in it so that it gets more, like, aerodynamic and stuff.
Yep, I think he had one with holes... he's dead now. Also, I think I've told you this on the show before, too, but my mom would proudly tell teachers on the first day of school, maybe when we were younger, I don't know if she ever told Mr. Simmons this, but she used to tell my teachers, if you ever have to hit him, let me know, because we'll hit him twice as much at home.
Okay. Now.
That's why I'm so normal.
Well, okay. So that's definitely not to weigh in. Let's just everybody be cool and don't let any of our parents know about this episode. The moms are not coming out looking great on old episode 2795 in the Collector Series.
Before you respond, I want you to know my mom is like your P1 on CBS morning CBS Sunday morning. So go easy.
Hey,
here.
Rand, we cancel this weekend's commentary about how Andrew's mom broke him. No, but I was going to say, oh God, just stop, Burbank, just stop. I don't, like, obviously I don't think that approach worked out great for you. I would say that, like, I feel like taking corporal punishment out of it, to some degree, and you had a really different experience than I did growing up. You got in trouble for things you didn't do, or you were the Justin Coleman of your childhood.
Right.
You were not the guy bullying. You were being bullied or being harassed or being hassled, and then occasionally you'd be like, enough is enough, and then you'd get in trouble for the enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not okay, and that sucks for you. That being said, I do think, like, my dearest mother-in-law is retired now from the public school system up in Cedro Woolley, and it was challenging for her to work there, because when kids would actually legitimately do bad stuff, and then they would call the parents and say, you know, mm-hmm. The kid did a bad thing. Many parents now, their default mode would be to question.
Yeah.
Like, how that's not how he is at home. Well, okay, fine. Maybe that's not how he is at home, but we're here at school and he just lit a cherry bomb in the toilet.
Right.
I don't mean he had, like, a number two problem. I mean,
right.
He literally put a bomb in the toilet, like, kind of stuff. And so I have always thought that when I grew up, one thing that I think kind of helped me have a little bit of respect for authority, well, that's not even true. There are some people who listen to this who knew me in my childhood, and they're laughing their ass off at the idea that I had respect for authority.
There are some people listening to the show who listen to the show.
Yeah. And there you go. I mean, this is the same show where a few days ago I told my gym teacher, he's so fat, the fat got into his brain. I said this as, like, a fourth grader. So, okay, I don't have a lot of respect for authority, but to the degree that I had any at all, it was kind of because I knew that if I got in trouble, and when I got in trouble, it was usually legitimate. I knew that I would also be in some trouble with my parents. And that was kind of, for me, a positive because my parents were not going to bed. My parents were not constantly telling authority figures that they were wrong for telling me that my behavior was not okay.
I think that's what my parents' point was.
Yeah. Now,
I really do.
Yeah. And I think there's probably a much more evolved way to say it and to do it now. And certainly there are times when like a kid is being wrongfully accused or a teacher is out of line or whatever. And I think, you know, I think my parents and my dad actually has said this to me before. Interestingly enough, I think my parents probably erred a little on the side of not going to bat for me. Like they just kind of assumed that because most of the time I was totally doing the wrong thing. But so there's probably a kind of a good middle ground. But this idea that like parents, a lot of parents today assume that if somebody criticizes their child's behavior, it's 100%. There's no chance it's their kid actually did something that wasn't okay. I don't know if that's the greatest thing either. Like we want to be advocates for our kid, but let's not advocate to the point where we have completely lost sight of the possible reality that maybe they did something not great.
Yeah, I think my parents are generally on the right side of history when it came to that stuff. And it's kind of funny because you would think, oh, the people who are the strictest with their kids, maybe they don't even have the kids that need the most punishment. But then it's like, well, yeah, but that's a circle. That's a snake that eats its tail, right? Like, what is the cause and effect?
Tautology.
There? Exactly. So, I don't think that I ever got in trouble. I mean, there were a couple of times, you're right, I was the Derek, not the Derek Coleman. I'm back in my trouble again.
Justin Coleman.
Back
in my trouble. Back on my bull. Back on my bull bleep. I was trying to keep you from having to cut it out.
Bullshit's fine. The boss said. There's like one time in particular that involves Mr. Simmons paddling me in front of the entire class.
Oh, no.
Get in trouble for defending myself. Oh. But for the most part,
that's Aslan being taken to the stone table in Narnia.
Well,
paddling, I know, but
he made us stand in front of the class. Actually, you know what? There was something wrong with him sexually. You know what he made us do is he made us stand in front of the class together with our hands on each other's hips and mouth the words, I love you. You're right. He was a weirdo.
While he would spank you?
And then if I didn't do it, he would sit there and he would hit us.
That's
in front of the class. You're right. That was some psychosexual bullshit.
That's really weird.
Should we call the show Psychosexual Bullshit?
Yeah, but then we have to bleep out the show, the title of the show.
We'll leave the kiki stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We'll leave the good stuff in there. All right. Well, let's see here.
We got music. We know that. Right?
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, we've got
this reworking
of Wonderful Christmas Time. And do we have a show title that we can print?
I feel like Where the Red Fern Groans is
okay.
Pretty good.
Oh God, that deserves a groan from the listeners.
Good.
And you know what? I just got an update from the camera at home. It's probably more of the same stuff, but just in case. Let's see here. Yeah, we're checking back in. Now all's quiet on the Bellingham front. There's nothing going on. I was hoping that maybe it wouldn't have been great if after Rich and Olive left and it was just like everything calmed down. It's like a raccoon just sneaks in like and then looks at the camera and like Muttley from Clutch Cargo goes, covers its mouth and makes that funny raspy sound.
If you get something like that, man, I'm telling you, you will go viral. You better hope that raccoon gets close to your camera.
Okay. I got to get a trained raccoon. Mm-hmm. This is how I'm going to make my viral. Yes. This is how I'm going to make my viral video. It's describing my plan on the show is a bad idea, but I'm going to definitely do this. All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. We're going to be right back here tomorrow morning with more imaginary radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go Browns, go eat a bagel. Watch out for raccoons, but treat them with the love and respect that was denied Andrew by his teacher, Mr. Simmons.
He's dead now.
I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to say thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. And please remember to mount too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.